Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Bold, Beautiful, Borderline podcast. It's Sarah here without Lori today. If anyone's following Lori's social media, she's been struggling with her health a bit. So we are just, let's just all take a moment to kind of think good thoughts for Lori and send her our well wishes and our love. I wish she was here today. But this was kind of a last minute recording, and it's always fun when I put out on social who wants to record and just see who shows up. And so, Brittany, super stoked for you to be here. I hadn't interacted with you a whole lot before this recording today, and it's super exciting to talk with you. So let's get into it. Tell us kind of like who you are and a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So my name is Brittany, 35, from North Carolina originally, in North Carolina right now. Travel speech therapist. So I travel across the United States for work. I have borderline personality disorder. I was diagnosed at 33 about 2 years ago. And I have been participating in DBT. January of this year would be about 14 months that I've been in DBT, and I actually graduated a group recently, but still doing individual. So yeah, happy to be here.
That's awesome. Congrats on graduating.
Thank you. Yeah. I was sad. I didn't want it to end. And my therapist was asking my thoughts, and I said, I want to keep going. And I was like, how long can I stay? And she's like, usually about 2 years. If you feel like you need to be there, then I'm not doing my job. And I'm like, okay. So graduated, but still an individual.
Yeah, I love that. That's so awesome. I don't talk about this a lot, but I did not graduate my
really
program. Yeah, I dropped out. Yeah. I think people would probably be very surprised to hear that. I dropped out probably 6 months in. At the time, I was newly married, working full time, and I was bike commuting downtown Portland because I was still kind of struggling with my eating disorder and excessive compulsive exercise. And I was going to individual therapy once a week, and my psychiatrist was recommending that I see her twice a month. And there was just a lot going on in my life at that time. So yeah, I made the decision to drop out. I don't regret it.
It's a lot of work.
Because I was going twice a week to group and then once a week to individual, bike commuting downtown 5 days a week because my eating disorder was still really taking over my life. And newly married, and I wasn't married very long before I got divorced, so already kind of in the chaos. And yeah, I dropped out. But when Lori and I got connected however long ago, I really started practicing it again. And it's amazing. And so I'm stoked for you that you've been able to go for so long.
Yeah, I was excited. Lots of work, so much work and time.
So much work and time.
And expensive. I mean, worth the money, but so fucking expensive.
Was yours not covered by insurance?
No. And then I get all the paperwork from my therapist, and I submit it to insurance, and they cover a little bit, but I have to call them because they're like, oh, we did not send you a check. And I'm like, but do you send it to them? No, we put it towards your deductible. And I'm like, this doesn't make sense. I hate insurance as a consumer and someone who works in healthcare.
Yeah, ditto. I've been having quite the go of my insurance. I just went 4 months uninsured. But when I was in DBT, it was fully covered. I was super, super blessed. So,
oh, that's amazing.
It was $0. And my wife had great insurance. Health insurance is one of the biggest barriers to recovery in this country, and a huge contributor of suicide.
Yeah.
So, okay. Totally. So take us back. So I'm interested to know a little bit about childhood, whatever you feel comfortable with, because 0 to 33 is a long time to go without.
Yeah, it is.
But presumably if you have borderline, you are very symptomatic. So tell us the story here.
Yeah. So, oldest girl of three, and there's a lot of years between my sisters and I, one's 27 and one is 22. So we were kind of like each raised by different set of parents. So childhoods were very different. I grew up with a lot of like physical, verbal, and sexual abuse. But from my dad specifically, mom was kind of a victim too, but also just like, you know, I was like nine and my mom like, what do you want for Christmas? And I'm like, I want you to leave dad. And like, that wasn't like a red flag for her. You know what I mean? So just like, I'm still working through my relationship with my parents, which seems to be like the hardest thing for me. And it's the hardest relationship to use my skills in. But like, I guess I have some resentment towards my mom. I always like look and I'm just like, I feel like you didn't protect me from that person. But then I also look at like, I feel like she was also a victim in that and she did the best that she could maybe in the situation. So a lot of trauma, a lot of abuse. Parents are actually still together, surprisingly. A lot of mental health on both sides of my families, like both parents, both set of grandparents, lots of that. Pretty much eighth grade suicide attempt, and very much just like swept under the rug and we're going to keep it moving, which I feel like is just like very, I don't know, like in the South, it's like, you know, don't let anyone know what's going on and kind of situation. Actually didn't make it to therapy until the summer after I graduated grad school in 2014. Like I never made it to therapy. And I remember.
Which, how old would you have been? You're 33. So 23?
Yeah, I guess. So. Yeah, 23. I'm not good at math. So if I have to like add and subtract, I've lost it. But yeah, maybe 23, 24. And I have moved away from home. I moved to the coast of North Carolina and got my first job working in the school system as a speech therapist. And I remember like having a phone call like with my dad, and he just like went from 0 to 60 and was like screaming at me. And I hung up the phone. I was like, I want the fuck off this roller coaster. Like, I want off of this. I need to get the fuck away from this. And I remember one of my friends that I was working with down to the coast. She's like, oh, you should see this therapist. So I went. It was my first time in therapy and I fucking loved it. I love therapy so much. I love going. So anyway, I started therapy and I feel like I've done it all. EMDR, CBT, I did art. I mean, I was driving to Asheville, North Carolina, like 2.5 hours every other week to do art. Like I just had this motivation of like, I don't want to end up like my dad. I don't want to end up like my dad. Like, I do not want to end up like that. And so that was like the motivator for me to like, I'm going to like figure this out, like what this is. And so I got a lot of diagnoses like PTSD and depression and anxiety. And, you know, I had weight loss surgery in 2018. And through that process, I had to see like a therapist and they do like a evaluation. And that therapist was like, oh, you're bipolar, which I was like, you've met me once. Don't just throw that out. And so I'd like, you know, went back to my primary therapist and she's like, no, that's not what this is. And so different things have been thrown around. But the first therapist I had in Wilmington, North Carolina, I moved back from the coast back home to the central North Carolina, got a different therapist and she served her purpose and she was great. But we kind of like had just kind of plateaued with each other, I think. And so I actually, after COVID, when a lot of therapy had gone online, I reached back out to that original therapist I had, and she's who gave me my diagnosis. I was like, I just was having a lot of behaviors and it was impacting progress. And she was like, one day she was like, you need DBT. I think that you have borderline. And I'm like, what? What is that? And then I start looking it up and like, there's just such a stigma and it's scary. Like, reading all these things. And I'm like, really, that's what you think? And she's like, yeah, there's no doubt in my mind, like, you have that. And so there was like this initial, just like looking at things and being like really upset and like, yeah, just like, you know, reading things. And I got the eggshell book and I read that and I'm like, oh my gosh, like it was scary. And
that then was literally probably so traumatic for you.
So traumatic.
Yeah.
So traumatic.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. And then I started reliving moments in my life from childhood to then. And I'm like, that makes sense. That makes sense. And I felt a little bit of shame leave me a little bit. Like some things that I had done in my past, I thought, okay, I feel a little less shame about that because that makes more sense to me on like why I would have these behaviors.
Can I just ask right there? Cause like that is the entry point for so much self-compassion, right? Going back to those mm-hmm. moments where you're like, I fucking hated myself for 15 years for this one stupid thing I did in middle school that was like so embarrassing. And now you realize, oh, that sweet baby just like,
I know, yeah,
is yearning for somebody to express love to her.
Yep. Oh, I might cry thinking about it. but yeah, no, I mean, that's exactly like what happened. And honestly, it still happens. Like there are moments where I feel like I have totally suppressed, like I don't recall it. And then it pops in my head and I'm like, damn, that was really hard. And I had no idea that that was like happening and going on. And I feel like also getting the diagnosis and learning about it and going through DBT, I've like found myself having a lot more empathy for people that I necessarily hadn't had in the past. Like I just see in my family, certain family members, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like it's definitely BPD. I mean, I don't say that to them, but I think about it and I'm like, there's definitely, absolutely, I feel like that. And then I just feel even more like compassion and empathy for that person.
Can I ask though? I have that same experience, right? Obviously borderline, we're not the first people, you know, in our lineage to have,
yeah,
to have borderline, because borderline is a combination of genetics and invalidating childhood environment, abuse, and all of these things. Well, our parents didn't just start that, right? They learned it from somewhere and, you know, blah, 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 vice versa, yada, yada. But we gain the insight and it helps us have compassion for them. And this is where the dialectics, right? Two things can be true at once. I have found the more insight and the more self-compassion I have, sometimes the more frustration I have, because it's like, listen, my guy, I know things are devastating and they hurt to you. And also there's all of these resources and tools out here so that you can get better. And you're choosing to.
Yeah, that's totally really feel that.
Hard for me.
Yeah. So I would say like with my mom and dad, like that is where I feel that just so deeply. Now I think of like aunts and uncles that I feel like have it, that not so much, because the relationship, there's a little separation there. I can have like more compassion for them. And I think also, being the oldest sibling and having so many years apart, I experienced my childhood and then I watched the other two. And there's such a difference in the way that we were treated, the way that our mental health was treated. Like
that makes you so othered.
Yeah, 100%. My it is. It's really hard. And I try to explain that. I've tried, like when my parents and I have had conversations and stuff, especially my mom and I, and I try to explain that there's just like initial like defensiveness. Like I think that she's, cause it is like, she is a part of that, you know? And, it's hard to talk to them about it. They are like, no, we did this, and this for you. And I'm like, okay, but also you did this, that was not a positive experience. So that's like really hard. And, you know,
can I my ask sister, also oh, yeah. before we move on from that, one of the things I had to do, and this was like the start of radical acceptance for me, was like, I had to stop going to the source of my invalidation and my trauma to try to explain to them why I was invalidated and traumatized in childhood and to stop asking for them to recognize it, because they were never going to be able to, because that would hurt them too much. And like, do I deserve to have someone validate what happened that wasn't fair? Yes. And like, at the same time, it just keeps hurting me to go back to the source. So I choose not to. And I wonder, like, where are you at in that
process? So I would say those type of conversations probably stopped about, before I left for Washington. So 2022, I know that my parents are not a place of emotional support. That is not their strength. That is their opportunity. Their strength is absolutely providing financial things, materialistic things. That's the way that they show their love. And it's taken me a while, but I've accepted that. So, and like right now, my husband are actually living in my parents' house. We've just moved in. We have some plans for moving, hopefully, and buying a house at some point potentially. And so we're here for some time, just for financial reasons for that. And it's like, now I know, like, this is where I'm really going to have to use my skills.
Are you living with them in this house?
Yeah.
Oh,
I know. Yep. I've done so much work, and I feel like I have like forgiven them for a lot of the things. I think getting older and watching them interact with their parents and their siblings, it's like, I think I've able to have a little more empathy and compassion for them, especially my mom. I think that's where it mostly goes, is towards my mom, even though we've had more like arguments about everything. But I think also she just has the capacity to, she has more capacity than my dad to have those conversations. But yeah, and you know, my husband and I, we sat down and we had long conversations about it. We pros and cons, we just like did all the pros and cons with it. And we gave ourselves a date, and that's what it is. And fortunately, upstairs is like very much like a studio loft, and it's very separated in some ways, and we all work. And so I'm just hoping that we just, you know, are not around each other as much, but it's hard. I mean,
totally, you know, I really admire your willingness to speak on your story and your truth without feeling the need to protect your parents from what they did. Well, and I haven't experienced the level of abuse that you've experienced from your father. I have experienced things that have, you know, influenced my borderline from my parents. And I just feel this like need to protect them that is so strong from ever talking about some of those things, and to watch you just say it, you know, I just want you to know that that's like for me, but also like our listeners are going to be very inspired by you.
Oh, thanks for saying that. I don't even know like where I got to that, when I got to that point, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know how I just am like, can be around them, you know, especially my dad. But again, I guess it's just like, I've seen how they've interacted with their parents and the things they've experienced, you know, and I can see my dad as a little kid being treated and going through the things that I've, you know, my mom's told me he's experienced stuff like that. And then I feel for him. But like, don't get it twisted. When he is like, when he acts and has his behaviors, I will be like, you know, I say something to him, which I think, you know, he doesn't actually respond back to me in the way that he used to. And my sisters think he's afraid of me. And I don't know if it's because like, I'm just really sassy and I'm going to say what I think, and it is what it is. And, you know,
well, he also probably knows that you are the holder of the truth.
Right. And he does. Yeah. that could be a thing too. But yeah, so again, my parents are not really a place of support, but you know, I have two younger sisters and our relationship is like amazing. I love them. I love them so much. So I feel like, you know, my youngest sister doesn't, I don't think really has any like experience with the trauma that I experienced. My middle sister does remember things that have happened. And so, you know, my middle sister and I, we've talked a lot about the experiences that we've had and like my experience, and she's a safe space for me. They both are. So that's been good. And I also don't know if like maybe that those relationships is what also a motivator to figure out how I can still have a relationship with my parents, because my sisters, they don't view my parents the same way I do because they were raised by different people. And so I want to spend Christmas with my sisters. I want to spend Thanksgiving and holidays and graduations. And like my parents are going to be there, you know? And so it's like, how can I don't want to miss these things. And so I need to learn how to, you know, manage my behaviors and myself and my emotions with these people that did cause me harm. And at the same time, they also love me. I mean, I know that. I believe that my dad does love me and he abused me as a child. Mm-hmm. That's hard.
It is hard.
Yeah.
I had to come to the same acceptance over a lot of conversations with my mom of accepting that she chooses what she wants for her life and she's not going to change the choices. And so like, in order to have a relationship with my mom, I have to have a relationship with my dad. And coming to that acceptance and like not fighting having a relationship with him. I mean, it's certainly not a relationship that I wanted. Mm-hmm. You know, it will never look the way I want. And in order to have a relationship with my mom, I have to have a relationship with my dad. And so I'm going to make that relationship for me as healthy, but as good as it could possibly be, which isn't ever going to be great. And that's okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely relate to that experience with your sisters. So, okay. You're married.
Married. Yeah. Married. Yep.
Being married is hard when you have borderline. So what has that experience been like for you? And how is your husband like, how is his experience and the way he interacts with you changed since you got your diagnosis?
Yeah. So, I will say that it has been hard because my behaviors have impacted our relationship, our marriage, like some of my stuff affects him. And so that's been really difficult at times. He is wonderful and he wants to know about me and like what I'm experiencing and, you know, what that's like and everything. So he's always like wanting to learn. He was planning on coming to like a DBT, like an individual DBT session with me. We are currently in couples therapy. And so he's in his own therapy. I do my therapy and then we do couples therapy. And so, you know, I think there is some resistance. I think the biggest issue in our relationship is language, right? So language matters. And when we're having discussions or arguments, like he'll say something and I'm like, that is such a judgment. Like, can we reframe it? And he's like, it means the same thing. And I'm like, but it doesn't sound the same. And so I think since we started couples therapy, he is, you know, learning and trying to adjust his language and adjust the way that he interacts with me at times. I think, you know, it's hard for both of us, you know. I just think like there are times where we're in an argument and I'll say, I need a minute. I really need a minute. And I'm trying to like regulate myself and all that. And sometimes he's like, okay. But then sometimes he doesn't. And he just keeps pushing and he keeps pushing. And then we end up having almost like after the argument, we come back and have like a discussion how that went. And I'm like, that was not okay. Like, you've pushed and pushed and pushed, and I've used every skill, and now we're here. I've gone off on you in this like insane way, but it was not a lack of me trying. Like, I was trying to like do this and use my skills. So nothing's perfect. Growth isn't linear, but it is the most hopeful that I have ever felt in a long-term relationship, and actually the most hopeful I have felt in our marriage, like ever. So it's hard. Marriage is hard. Marriage is hard with BPD, but marriage is hard without it too. Like, it is the hardest thing that you will do, I think.
Oh,
choosing
sure.
a person every day, despite not liking them some days. So,
yeah, divorced, I also, get that.
Yep. Almost, but yeah. No.
So. I have to say though, like the learning of the DBT skills, like I was in DBT in my marriage, right? And I did learn so many skills and I was able to implement them at times. But getting medicated and getting sober is really what changed my ability to successfully use them. And I'm really glad I'm not with my ex-wife because our core values are so different. And I didn't know that when I married her because I was a baby, right? And I was marrying her because I felt like I needed someone to save me and love me and protect me. And she was never going to be able to do that, right? That's not how it works. And also, she's a cop and I'm a raging leftist. Social worker and you know, whatever, we could go down a whole thing about that, but like the reality is I couldn't use my skills the way I can now in my marriage, and my wife wouldn't go to like a family night at DBT because she was afraid that she would see previous inmates, which now that's a whole can of worms that I'm not going to open in terms of stigma. But I remember feeling so invalidated by her. I would throw all her clothes out down the stairs, screaming, you know, whatever. And then I would send her like literally like 75 texts in a row being like, I fucking hate you. I fucking hate you. I fucking hate you. And then like, I would type so fast that by the end of it, it's just like random letters, you know, like,
Yeah.
And I am so sad for her that she had to live through that with me. Right. I mean, I'm sad for myself that I've had to have a life where I've been so dysregulated like that, but like, I'm used to that life now, but the fact that she had to go through me being so emotionally abusive like that because of that language, right? You said language matters. I couldn't tell you how many times I told my ex-wife I fucking hated her and I wished I was dead. And like, you know, if you don't blah, 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 whatever. So it's really beautiful to me that you and your husband are doing that work.
Yeah. You know, I think that one, I think one of the reasons why is that we've both experienced childhood trauma. Does that make sense? And so there's this level of like, we understand that. And see, we are opposite where like, I love therapy. Like I look forward to that like hour a week. Right. And I'm a big advocate to everyone there. When a friend's like, I'm having this issue and I'm like, you should go to therapy. That may not be good, but I just like the idea of like talking to someone and like helping you and giving those skills. Like, I love that. And so going to therapy has been really difficult for him, you know, just because he doesn't want to talk about the hard stuff. And I get that. But he is like trying and doing. And I think because we both experienced trauma, there's this level of understanding. Because I can remember past relationships where like I would go to Christmas and holidays and everyone was just like, so, you know, they weren't yelling and there wasn't like tension and there wasn't just like a lot of like dysregulated people. And I never felt comfortable being as open about my home life and like my struggles and stuff like that. But with him, you know, I think that we both have just experienced things. You know, we don't get to pick our parents but we say that all the time, like we don't pick our parents. And so I think that's been a factor in that he's experienced stuff too. Yeah. So hopeful. He's wonderful. I've always wanted to be a travel speech therapist. And so in 2022, I was like, I really want to try this. And so he was like, go for it. And he did not come with me. So he actually, we took a cross country trip to Washington and he 3 days later flew back to North Carolina. And so he's always been really supportive. That was actually really hard for our marriage. And I think that was really hard for him. I don't think I realized how difficult that was for him until I like got back, you know? And I did some things while I was in Washington, some behaviors and stuff like that, that really impacted him. And I really thought that, okay, this is not, we're not going to make it. Like what have I done? But he decided to stay and we're like working through it. And DBT has really like changed me and helped me. And he says, it's like a 180 and he's like, you're yourself. You're just like a more effective, better version of you. And I love that. I don't want to be like totally different. I like who I am. But yeah, so that's been good.
And how long have you guys been married?
We got married in 2021. Like we were newlyweds and I had, now everyone was like, you just got married. Why are you leaving? And you know, two of my best friends, I didn't say this before I left, but once I got to Washington and things kind of got a little, you know, I just started doing a lot of my behaviors. They were like, I felt like you were running away, which is something that I do. Like, I mean, there was 1 year that I had 8 W-2s because I had switched jobs. Like I just was like, nope, not doing this. Nope, not doing this. And so I think two of my best friends thought I was like running away. And maybe I was a little bit, but I always
say avoidant attachment.
Yeah. Even though Washington had its like hard parts, it had wonderful parts, you know, and that's where I was able to actually start DBT. And my therapist is in Seattle. So I still do that like online. And honestly, hard for both of us in some aspects. And I think harder on him. But I think we can both look back and appreciate that that is where I was able to like start DBT because I had tried North Carolina and there were only two programs I could find. The one that was accepting patients was at the coast, 3.5 hours away. And the other one was not accepting and just like even more expensive than the one at the coast. So sorry, I'm rambling now, but yeah, like that's where I got to do DBT. I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's wonderful. The lack of DBT resources, it seems like in the Midwest are pretty wild. Midwest and South are pretty wild.
Yeah. I mean, when I got to Washington, I started looking like in Seattle, there were so many, I'm just like, oh, which one to choose? But yeah, here in North Carolina, I could only find two, in 2021 time.
I think part of that, I mean, obviously we're much more progressive, states and whatever, but part of it, I think is like, we really do have a huge queer population. Queer people are moving to the West Coast like crazy from the Midwest and the South. Queer people have like, you know, very specific queer trauma, borderline trauma, suicide, all of those things DBT, right, works so well for. That's my hypothesis for part of the reason why we have more outside of the fact that mental health care is just more valued here. But yeah, I don't know if that hypothesis is true, but maybe someone will study it.
Yeah, no, I definitely feel like the healthcare just seemed very different. There is like a speech therapist, like knowing what insurance companies, which I feel like they should be the same. But anyway, insurance companies, I feel like in North Carolina for my patients, like they don't get a lot. They don't approve a lot. They're cutting therapy a lot. Where in Washington, not just like the case as much. And there just seemed to be like better care. Because I work with adults as speech therapists. And so just like going into long-term care facilities or like adult family homes and things like that, just like very different in Washington versus North Carolina. Oh, I just think healthcare seems like relatively better in Washington, but healthcare system in the United States sucks. So.
Oh, 100%. I worked for the Developmental Disabilities Administration of Washington for like 5 years. Mm-hmm. So, maybe you worked with some of our folks with IDD.
Maybe. Maybe.
We had a lot of folks living in adult family homes. Okay, tell me why you wanted to go into speech therapy, and how was your mental health through graduate school before we talk about your travel experience?
Yeah. So, you know, when I started college, I was like, I want to be a nurse. And then I got into like, hell no, I don't want to be a nurse. And then I was like, oh, maybe I'll be a teacher. And then I was like, no, I need to make more money. So I took a semester and did the Disney College program in college, which was like cool. Came back and was like, maybe I'll try speech therapy. And I got into the program. I was like, I don't know what else I'm going to do. So I did that. And like, I fell in love with it. And then like, looking back, it's like, well, there's just like, I can work in schools, I can work in hospitals and adults. And like, I just feel like it kind of encompasses a little bit of both of like education and like nursing to a certain degree. So that's how I got into it. It was just like, why the fuck not? And then I loved it. And so in grad school, I feel really lucky because in undergrad, I formed like some relationships with, like say four or five other students. And we called ourselves the back row batches, and we sat in the back row and, you know, just like kikied a lot. And four of them and I went to grad school together. So I already had this like really good support system in grad school. We had our way that we like studied and did assignments and all of that. And so I feel like that group of women really like was a help for me. I will just say, like, growing up, my friends were safe havens, like their homes and them, they were safe havens. So I've always put my friends at like these, like this pedestal. Like I have five best friends that have really just saved me in moments of my life. And I feel so lucky and so fortunate about that. But yeah, so in grad school, had that support. I worked. I remember one of my clinical educators being like, you can't work. You've got to like focus. And I'm like, I can't not work. I have to make money. Like, so this is how that's got to be. I look back and have moments of grad school that I'm like, that could have been some DBT, some like, you know, when shit got really hard and I got really upset and had like one of my clinicals, I just like kind of like had a big reaction, really high emotional intensity with my clinical educator, and the relationship just, and so I ended up leaving that clinical placement and needed to be placed somewhere else. And that was like really hard. But I think back overall, like I was okay. I think I, you know, also through college, I drank a lot. Just like partied very hard and somehow made it through grad school. But as I became an adult and I still was doing that, but my friends were stopping that, I always thought this is just what you do, right? Like you're in college is what you do. And then I realized, no, there's something, this is not what we do.
Side note, I fucking hated everybody who didn't have to work full time in graduate school. I was just like, fucking, and I think actually a big part of the development of my eating disorder in graduate school was severe. And at one point my nutritionist said I was going to have to drop out and go inpatient. And I was like, I'm less than a year from graduation and I work full time. I can't fucking drop out of school or work, you know, to fucking get this together. So I'll try to start eating again, but, I fucking hated people that didn't have to work. Anyways, I don't know if you've heard Lori and I talk about this on the podcast. Lori is very similar to you in that she's got lifelong friends, you know, that are really like her safe haven and her people also, in addition to her husband. And, you know, I have not been able to maintain any friendships. I don't have any friendships that I've had since high school or college or middle school or anything like that. There's only one person from high school that I still talk to, and I maybe see her like once a year. And, you know, I really like when if anybody asks me to like name who like a good friend is, I don't have anybody that I could name. I am okay with that, right? Like, cause not having close friends is a way for me to avoid severe dysregulation. I also understand that it's something that leaves me feeling very isolated and lonely. And so it's just this like double-edged sword. But the fact that you have not just one, but five women in your life that are there to support you is like super, super rad.
Yeah, I feel like I feel so lucky, so lucky. And I would say three of them I've been friends with since like senior year of high school, you know? And so, yeah, I just feel really, I feel so and grateful for them. And also just like, you know, having my mental and emotional health things and BPD, it's like they're a safe space. They're totally a safe space about that. And there's no judgment.
Do you not have symptoms with them? Like you don't split, you don't feel rejected, you don't feel annoyed by them. Like you don't have.
I would say that with two of them, I don't ever. And I don't know if it is because we consistently talk daily and they are the two of them I feel the most safe with and would literally tell them anything. And I think what it is about those two specific women is that the effort is matched always. Like it's never me feeling like I'm crying or I'm saying, and they're not, like both of them match me always. And I think that they both have had their like mental and emotional health struggles and they've been very vulnerable. I think vulnerability is like the biggest thing for our relationship too. Now the other three, I would say I am not as close with two of them as I once was right now in our lives, you know, like kids and stuff like that moving away. But there is a friend of mine that I've been best friends with for a long time and I consider her like, you know, and I say they're my five best friends, but I will say that one, they have each been like my best friend in a season of life, but still all like friends and I'm friends with them. But one I've had it's been a tough relationship with, and I think there was a little bit of codependency on both sides of like from both parties and lots of things that have happened. And I don't know that I was always the best. I wasn't always open with her about how she has like things that she's done that's hurt me and stuff. And I can think back in moments where I have like, we've gotten to these like big arguments and like things have happened. But also it was like, we both were having these like intense behaviors, these intense like things happening. And so, at that time. And so, I don't know, I'm like thinking about it. And I think that one person we have had things, but somehow we just still always manage to work through it. And I literally don't know how, but we do.
Yeah. I mean, that's amazing. My avoidance is way too high. I'm just like, nope.
And I don't know if also it's just like I look at like I didn't, you know, in my family, my like childhood, and like I don't know, like I do want family, you know what I'm saying? Like I want that, and maybe because I want that, I consider them my family. And maybe sometimes I like let things, maybe my desire to want them to be my family overtakes the desire. Like I can maybe like let things go, or I don't look into things as much as maybe I once did. I don't know. Now I'm going to think about it and I want to like analyze
it. Yeah, I like it. I'm the exact way. I have such a strong desire for family. Okay, y'all. I know you probably want to keep listening to Brittany, but here's the thing. I'm not trying to make this episode go on forever for you. And sometimes it's good to wait. So I want to say I loved listening to Brittany talk about the radical acceptance that she has with regards to her family and maintaining those relationships. I strive to get to a place like that. And next week, we're going to talk with Brittany about how she's created community when she's lived in places she wasn't familiar with, because it takes a lot of bravery to go and meet new people. Stay tuned. Hi, friends. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Bold, Beautiful, Borderline podcast. Lori and I are so grateful that you're here with us on this journey, and we can't wait to dive into more topics in the future with you all about borderline and even have some more fun and exciting guests to join us on the podcast. If you really enjoyed this episode, we would love if you would rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen. We would also love to see you interact with us on social media and on our Patreon page. The links to that are included in the show notes, so check us out there. We would be incredibly honored to get to know you all as you get to know us and our recovery stories. We love you, and we'll see you next time.